Roto-Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up to the minute industry news.
Time for me to tell you about the biggest tournament in the history of daily fantasy sports.
Interviews from the biggest names in the industry.
The one and only Kondia. Head Chopper joins us now to talk about this weekend in daily fantasy football. Now on the podcast, Napster Man.
And game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head game, you are just going to lose.
Here is your host, the one and only, Dan Bock.
All right, pretty excited about our next guest. We talk about a lot of different sites in the daily fantasy space, and one of the ones that has certainly made some waves over the last year is Fantasy Draft. And we're a little bit overdue in talking about them, and you know, as a guy who covers the industry and all the sites and topics and news that happens, I think it was time to bring them on and learn about them and learn about their history and what they've learned along the way. And we're excited to have their CEO, one of their co-founders, Steve Kromboltz, with us here on the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Steve, long overdue, but good to have you on the podcast. How are you?
I'm great, Dane. How are you doing today? I appreciate you inviting me on today. I've listened to you many times. We've, of course, met a few times, so happy to be on today.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Fantasy Draft right now is a site that's been in the news over the past month or so based on the Fantasy Aces, you know, player acquisition. We're going to kind of talk all about that. That was a huge gesture of gratitude towards the players and the community. And I think it was important to kind of talk about everything about the site even before that. So let's go to the beginning. Like, I don't think a lot of people realize how long Fantasy Draft has been around. So give us the origins of the company and some more about, you know, you guys at Fantasy Draft and when you got started and the idea itself.
Yeah, so we started in earnest around, I think it was April of 2014. Some colleagues of mine in my previous business, we had done business with a large company that's based down here in Charlotte and gotten to know the CEO over a number of years. And he approached me and one of my other co-founders and said, "Hey, listen, I got an idea. I want to run by you guys. Would you be interested in coming down to Charlotte and talking it through?" He's one of those guys that when you do get a call from him and he has an idea, you go and listen to what he says. So, it turned out the idea was DFS. And to be honest with you, you know, my background is not DFS. My background was as a businessman, and we were at that time in an e-commerce business. So we basically won't get into it and bore everybody, but we built e-commerce platforms for retailers. So it's basically a website where you can transact and buy things. So when we came down and talked to him about it, and, you know, he told us in a little bit before the meeting, I hadn't even heard of DFS. It was still pretty early. It was way before, you know the timeline. So there wasn't a whole lot of advertising going on then. So, you know, fast forward, we all agreed. And as part of the deal, I uprooted my family, brought them from, we were in Bethesda right outside of Washington, D.C. at the time, moved down to Charlotte, and started the company up. So we started in April, actually, you know, three of us up in D.C. and in our kitchens, alternating days. Moved down here in June and then built the site and launched what we'll call now a soft launch. It wasn't all that soft at the time, as you remember, in around November of 15, where we launched our platform with football and with the NFL, and had some very large prize pools, actually our largest ever. And, you know, everyone that was around knows what happens next. The platform was didn't work.
Yeah, let's just kind of talk about that in the beginning, because I think everybody was a little bit leery when a new site comes in and ran a GPP of the magnitude that you guys did. And what basically happened? Was it just the site couldn't handle the number of people you had who suddenly decided to play on it. I'm clearly that was a learning situation for you guys, but did you just underestimate the market? Did you underestimate the technology? What was the big mistake in that 2015 NFL launch? Because I remember it absolutely vividly, and I know, you know, the tech issues, you know, ended up costing you guys a lot of money in player refunds, and to be fully honest, a lot of times sites don't bounce back from an issue like that right off the bat. So tell me a little bit, not to dwell on horrible things early on in the company, but you know, what exactly happened in that situation, and how would you have done it very differently now that you know the space much better?
Yeah, you know, and I don't mind talking about it because, you know, what we did sure. is a big part of what we are today. And, you know, we did build a lot of trust with the users that are still around because we went above and beyond to make things right. But having said that, you know, what it really comes down to is it's building a DFS site is extremely complicated. And the developers we used at the time bit off more than they could chew. So they built what looked and felt like a great site if you wanted to play with 15 of your best friends. But once you started putting scale on it, it basically didn't work at all. So, you know, we pushed a pretty aggressive timeline on our build for the site, and we had committed on the marketing side early on to some of the stuff we were going to do for launch weekend. And the IT group that we were working with at the time that we'd since long ago parted ways with just weren't able to deliver. And quite frankly, you know, we're not naming any names, so it doesn't matter. They sort of fed us a bill of goods on some of the stuff that we didn't find out till last minute. So going into the launch, we knew we were facing some challenges. We didn't necessarily know how big those challenges were going to be, and it was all scaling issues. So essentially, once you hit whatever, you know, I can remember eagerly sitting there staring at the numbers, jumping in on the entries in our lobby and feeling great and still being nervous. And then all of a sudden the record skipped. And what happens with scalability is you hit a point where nothing works. So as soon as the databases get overloaded, it basically locks up everything on the site. So,
And to be upfront with everybody who might not have been around then, you know, you guys, like you said, you paid everybody back. I mean, you guys went above and beyond what I think a lot of people even would have expected at the time. And, you know, I think that saved you, saved your company. And it's something that I don't know that a lot of companies necessarily might have been able to accomplish that early on. It probably was a costly mistake, but you know, when this was going down, I got to commend you and your team for realizing like, hey, this is a landmark moment for us to make things right. Otherwise we might never have a chance. So is that something you guys certainly realized in that moment that, you know, making everybody whole was going to be the most important thing?
Yeah. I mean, we're very fortunate in that we've got a very dedicated group of investors, and, you know, led by our primary investors who are brothers. And, you know, from the start, they didn't waver on our commitment to putting players first. And we, you know, we've always had that as our commitment, even before any of the legislation came along that made it a requirement to have some of these player-friendly rules. But, yeah, you know, we looked at it, and like you said, we did really go, you know, I'll say it now because it's a long time ago, but we went above and beyond because we paid out, of course, all the winners. We paid out everybody. You know, there was an issue. It was a horrible issue, but it made us better in the long run. But, you know, people would submit lineups and it would take their money and show them as submitted, but not enter the lineup in the contest. So we paid everybody who had that happen as well. So we paid multiple winners of the top prize, which was like $25,000. And we did it without pause. So, you know, we knew that we were in it for the long haul, and to be in it for the long haul, you can't burn people on your first outing. So we swallowed our pride and put the money out there and made everybody whole. And I think for the players, unfortunately, they didn't enjoy the experience, but I think they enjoyed the financial rewards of the experience because sure. there was essentially no way to lose for a lot of folks. So,
Now, after that took place, you guys really regrouped, though. I mean, you probably had to look at yourself and say, okay, let's start over and, you know, maybe, you know, massive overlay or massive GPP isn't the right way to kind of get this started. Is that, did you look in the mirror and come to that realization? And I'm assuming from that moment, your plan of growth changed a good bit.
It did. You know, we still had considerable overlay for a number of weeks, but as the site limped along, you know, we basically limped through the remainder of the season after that. I mean, overlay is a tricky marketing tactic to master. It's just very easy to get extremely hurt by it, and it doesn't make a lot of sense unless you have a lot of marketing dollars going into bringing a lot of new users to the site. So if you have a lot of overlay, but there's not a lot of people realizing you have a lot of overlay, then it doesn't serve any purpose. So, yeah, you know, we did realize that that probably wasn't going to be the best approach for us moving forward after a number of weeks. And, you know, we also didn't have a site that worked. So what we did is we went to the NFL season and we limped through every weekend. There were issues every weekend. You know, without fail. So we limped through every NFL weekend, and then, you know, from there we completely scrapped the platform and rebuilt a new one from the ground up. So that's the platform we're on today. But after NFL, you know, just to touch on it real quick, and then I'll let you keep going, we basically did zero marketing, pulled back all promotion, and just left it up and let whoever wanted to play, play. So it was very small. And, you know, for basketball and hockey. And once the new platform was ready to go around September, I believe, of 15, rather, we relaunched and then re-engaged our marketing efforts and the like.
And when you relaunched, how much thought did you put into the product and differing it from maybe the big two, FanDuel and DraftKings at the time? Obviously, you had a lot more competitors back then as well. A lot of those have kind of fallen off. Well, you guys have remained. But, you know, I look at the build of the site and, you know, especially from roster construction, you guys are very different. Was that a goal of yours, you know, when you decided to, you know, kind of brand the site and say, hey, you know, we can't just run a copycat of FanDuel and DraftKings, and was that part of the plan?
Yeah, you know, we wanted to accomplish two things. Again, I always bring up and reference our players first motto because we wanted to build a site that was easy and appealed to your average player. So in thinking through that, you know, we thought when you're going through roster construction, if you make the position requirements less rigid, so instead of first, second, third base, catcher, you have three infield, three outfield, then your average player who's not necessarily a sharp or certainly a quote-unquote pro is going to have an easier time drafting the players that they know, because your average sports fan, you know, they know their division and they know their local team, but they don't know every team out there. So we looked to make them a little bit less restrictive and in that regard, and we did that across all sports. It's less, you know, there's less you can do with football, and football we just had two utility, no kicker. And in basketball, we had, you know, the same type of flexibility there with, you know, not point guard, not shooting guard, leaving some flexibility there. So our goal was really to make it easier for the average player, with the intent of making, you know, trying to build the product with a healthier ecosystem, and not giving, you know, or at least trying to limit the advantages that you give to the best players. Now, the best players are always going to win, right? And they should, because they're the best. But there are certain things, and we all know and read that some of the stuff that's happened since then that they can sort of limit their ability to really take a lot of the site away, or a lot of the cash away from your quote unquote average player.
Well, in the last year, we've seen a ton of regulation. Like you said, you guys were kind of wanting to be ahead of the curve on some of that. Now everybody is, has to comply to, you know, regulations in different states. But one of the things that is obviously a huge burden for smaller sites is to have to pay, you know, the regulatory fees that come along with it. And, you know, I want to give you the stage here because I believe you guys, you know, have made it, you know, very known that, you know, you guys obviously are going to, you know, go by all the different regulations out there, but you also are paying fees in some of the larger states, which is something that I know some of the other sites, smaller sites, are not doing. I believe, does that include Virginia, Indiana? Is that right?
It includes Virginia. Indiana is not due until April 1st. But yeah, we've embraced the legislative requirements because if your intent is to be around and to be a player in the marketplace, you're going to have to. It is a burden on any business, certainly a smaller business with less revenue, because it's a significant amount of money. It's north of $100,000 easy. And as more states are on, it's going to be a lot more. I mean, like if you take Virginia and Indiana alone, it's $100,000 in fees alone up front. We did pay $50,000 for Virginia. Indiana is due April 1st. We intend to seek our license, go through the licensing process there rather. If you're doing these, if you're looking at each of these from strictly a financial standpoint, a lot of them wouldn't make sense and you wouldn't do it. But if you're looking for the bigger picture and down the road, and you know we have plans to be much larger than we are today, then you have to do it. So, and I think you want to send the right message to your players as well, especially in the times of turmoil like we've seen with the Aces issue and the Hub and Fantasy Up. You know, it doesn't hurt to have legislation in place. And we have no problem with the legislation. It's just, it takes a lot of time. So, and, you know, just to touch on it quickly and not labor for too long, but we've been going through the annual systems audit requirements right now that are due, I think, by April 1st. And my partner, who's our CTO and president, he's the brains behind the outfit, I like to say. He's spent probably 10 solid days where that's all he does is prepare and work with this outside firm to have this system audit. And to make it even worse or more complicated, there's no uniform system audit requirement for each state. They're all subtly different. And so that means you have to produce one for each state. And these are not cheap. These are, you know, more than $20,000. And wow. Then go up from there. And each one you have to produce for another state. These companies, you know, when you work with companies like this, it's not like, okay, we did it for you and it's $10 for the next version. It's real money for each one you have to do. So having said that, you know, we have embraced the legislative process and we're in line with all the rules and regulations, but it is difficult and it's not our favorite thing to do. I'd rather have all that time and effort spent on improving and adding features to the site because we have a long list of stuff we want to do. But it's what you have to do.
Well, you know, you'd hope that, especially from the auditing side of things, that these states would have some reciprocity between each other. Because you say, like you said, if it's 20,000 per state, that really can add up rather than having one done that can cover all states or, you know, a number of states. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I hope through the legislative process can maybe be fixed up, because I don't see the point in necessarily getting numerous audits for the exact same thing. I'm assuming you agree with that statement.
No. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I don't fault any of the people involved. I mean, these legislative people in each state don't have a footprint. So especially early on last year, you know, everything's brand new to everybody. And when you talk to them, they're all great and easy to work with, and they feel for you. And, you know, with some of the requirements you have to adhere to, but at the same time, these are requirements and it's given to them, and that's what it is. It is what it is. So I think we will see a cleanup. you know, my guess would be moving forward. So you'll see some uniformity, and you can produce, you know, one boilerplate, for lack of a better word, document that will work across all of them. But as it is now, it's pretty hectic because, you know, a lot of the issue is there's really subtle nuances between basic terminology across multiple states. So you have to, you know, you have to address that. And we're doing it. So we'll get through it. Hopefully it gets better.
Well, this weekend, I had a chance to talk with a number of big daily fantasy players. And one of the, and I asked him at one point in time, I said, hey, have you played on Fantasy Draft yet? And he said, you know what? The last three or four number three sites in the market have died off. And I'm just not comfortable or confident that they're not going to be next. How do you overcome that? Because I think that there's a lot of people who have that mentality, especially in the upper echelon, who maybe have been burned with losing thousands of dollars on particular sites. What do you have to say to that? And how can we as players be assured that you guys are capitalized and that we're not going to fall into a situation like Fantasy Aces? Because, you know, they bamboozled a lot of people. They stole a lot of people's money in my eyes. And, you know, I think from the outside, most of us didn't believe it, maybe didn't do our diligence on this. And, you know, obviously I'm expecting you to explain maybe a little bit more in depth than we would have asked in the past, just because we've run into this problem. So tell us about how the site is subsidized and why we shouldn't have any concerns about our money on Fantasy Draft.
Yeah, well, you don't earn trust over one day, right? You earn it over a period of time, and especially if you're a smaller player, because people are just going to be more suspect of a smaller player, whether they should be, whether it's not right or wrong, it doesn't matter. It's the case. So if you go back to everything we've done and have done and what we've touched on in the past, I think we have a history and a long record of always doing things the right way. So I don't think there's any examples that you could find out there of us doing things the wrong way or us taking advantage of a player or us not going above and beyond and putting up extra money to make players whole. And that's to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Another thing to look at is all the state regulations that we just talked through. This is significant. It's a significant investment of funds to get registered. And if you don't have the funds to register, you're not going to register in those states. So the fact that we have gone out and done it proactively with every state, and some of the other smaller operators have not, is another indication of the type of funding that they have.
One quick question on this, too, because I think one thing that bothered me about the ACES thing more than anything was that, you know, we have the segregated accounts aspect in pretty much every set of state regulations we have, and those had been around for quite some time, you know, at least 6 months before ACES went belly up. Why did that take place? I mean, you operate, you're in touch with these people. In the last 6 months, and I want to say, like, before Fantasy Aces went belly up, what requirement did you guys have to prove that your money for player funds was segregated from operating accounts? Because I have a feeling that if that ever took place before Fantasy Aces went belly up, we would have known about it. The regulations would have caught it. Is this something that maybe didn't take place but is now taking place and reactive from this? Talk to me about that, because that was something that really bothered me about the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, you had basically what you had to do with the states was attest to the fact that you were compliant to all the regulations that's listed and basically submit a long exhibit to the applications detailing how you adhere to every one. So they did not have anybody on site looking at stuff or anything like that. We did have to provide bank account information and stuff like that. So really what it comes down to is people lied, and people lied and attested to, you know, adhering to rules and regulations that they weren't adhering to. And knew that they were doing it. So, you know, if you look at the companies that have come and gone, and you outside of a company like Rosters, who you know, they didn't succeed, but they were managed in a professional manner.
Yep.
You know, exited gracefully, made sure everybody was taken care of. If you look at some of the other ones, I don't think that there was a whole lot of seasoned business executives or people that had any history running companies. You know, between me and my partners, you know, we've got 20 plus years, give or take, each running small and large organizations, both public and private. We've gone through IPOs, we've gone through Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, we've gone through, you know, all these different types of things that you only learn from being in business for a long time. And so when you're in business, in a real business, you do things the right way. And that's never been even an afterthought for me. You know, I never would even consider doing things the wrong way. So when we're given rules, we follow the rules. And we have from day one, even before there was legislation in place. So now that there is legislation in place, and to touch on what you asked on previously, is there was some reactive requirements after ACES, specifically from New York, where we had to provide all kinds of data to them, basically proving that you were in compliance with the segregated funding requirements. And you know, we provided all that, and you know, we're in compliance with everybody. And like I said, we're now going through these costly systems audits, who are done by well-known gaming labs that have been in the casino industries forever, and they're going to be attesting to the fact that we're in compliance with everything and passing everything. So it's going to be real difficult for people that are actually licensed and operating above board in states to not follow the rules. Now, if someone's a crook, someone's a crook. And, you know, we see that every day in the papers. But I can, you know, put my personal name on the line and let everybody know that, you know, your funds are always and will be always safe with us. You know, they're held in a separate LLC that's held by the players' funds. It's a different operating business from the main fantasy draft. It's never commingled with our operating funds, and you know, we've never had any issues. You can, you know, you should also ask around and as a player and find people that have played our site and ask them what their experiences are, because we're comfortable that you'll hear good things.
We're joined by Steve Krombolt. He's the co-founder and CEO over at Fantasy Draft. I'm actually loving this conversation. It's very enlightening from my perspective. And the next thing I want to get on is the ACES bailout. Let's talk about this. First off, you know, how much money did it cost you? Second off, why'd you do it? And third, what happened when everything came out about we're going to do it and then we're not going to? Like, what? Take us through this process the best that you can. You know, I don't know if there's certain things you can't talk about, but it was fascinating in terms of how it all came together. And I know that we as an industry are extremely thankful that you guys, you know, went forth and bailed out as many players as you did. So let's talk about this and answer a few of those questions.
Yeah, so, you know, it's still a pretty small industry. So, you know, or I consider my job to know everybody in the space, certainly everybody that's running all the other sites out there when there were a lot of smaller sites. And, you know, so we knew or had spoken to Trent and Brian and their father, you know, a number of times throughout the year, just keeping in touch, seeing how they're doing. Hey, if you ever have any interest in selling the business, you know, let us know. We'd be happy to have a conversation with you. So there had been ongoing conversations here and there, but nothing serious. They had other plans in mind. But at the end, you know, they had given us the indication that they were more serious in looking at selling it. So that was the, you know, the time, obviously, when we made an announcement we were going to be acquiring them. We we are under NDA still, which says there's persist. So I can't give you the exact details of it, but I can tell you, you know, there were some things we learned in the process that really made it so there was no way you could do the deal.
Okay.
So we learned some stuff and basically had to walk away from it at that time. That happens a lot in a lot of businesses, but not so much in such a public way, I think, especially mm-hmm. with surroundings that were so mysterious because people didn't know what was going on with Fantasy Aces. And we, of course, were not at liberty or allowed to say anything at that time. So fast forward, you know, a few days or whatever it was, a week or 10 days to them declaring bankruptcy. You know, we had looked at their user base and we knew a little bit about their size. We, of course, doing your job, you have to understand the marketplace and what everybody else is doing out there. So we were comfortable with our understanding of what, you know, their user counts and their, you know, who was playing what. And when we learned that the player money was all gone, we felt for a number of reasons that it was the right decision to come in and try and work out a deal with the bankruptcy court, you know, with the sole intent of making the players whole. Obviously, for us, we have to have some other benefit, which is we want players playing on our site. But,
sure.
You know, I say the sole intent of making players whole because we made it clear from the start to the bankruptcy trustee that we had no intentions of making a payment to the estate for the user list. The way we were acquiring the user list was 100% of the proceeds we were paying was going to be earmarked to reimbursing the players for their missing money. So with that sort of unique in a bankruptcy, we all sort of know that the high-level way a bankruptcy works, but basically it's their job as a trustee to maximize the sale of the assets to try and pay back the creditors. The funny thing is that the players aren't necessarily at the top of the creditor list. They're behind secured creditors.
Sure.
So thankfully, the trustee and the judge understood the unique situation and were on board and accepted our offer. So we committed $700,000, give or take, plus some legal fees. We actually had to pay like $20,000 in legal fees. This is all public, so it can be shared. And that money is earmarked and set aside for the Fantasy Aces users to come back and you know, go through a process that we built with custom software that's pretty smooth and seamless. I think you did it, right?
Yeah, no, it was super easy, super easy.
Yeah, and you could go in and claim your money up to $1,000. And you know what? We looked at the money, and we looked at the user base, and we wanted to make as many users as we could whole, and that's sort of how we ended up with $1,000, because $1,000 made about 99, I think it was 99.6% of the players whole. Now, unfortunately, there were certainly a lot of, and people have seen the list again because it's public, there were some guys that were much higher than that, and, you know, we tried to give them some benefits to help them get some of their money back. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, it was a risk for us. But it was a calculated risk that we still believe is going to pay dividends for us down the road. And, you know, equally as important, it helped, hopefully, you know, helps all the players that lost their money know that there's sites out there that do things the right way and that we were happy to help them out and happy to get their money back. And, you know, the hope is that they give us a try and they like the site, and we have to do our job and put a good product out there so they do stick around, and that's what we intend to do. So, you know, that's it in a nutshell.
Well, you covered it all. I don't even have anything followed up. You actually told me everything that I was curious upon of that deal. Fascinating stuff. And you know, you're right. I mean, I think it does go a long way with the community to see that, and especially when you consider the magnitude. Like you say, you're a little short of $1 million, $750K, towards people with very little expectation. I mean, hopeful, but no expectation of them necessarily, you know, playing it. Like, they could have withdrawn it if they want. And I thought that was really, really well executed by you guys. Let's talk about moving forward. You know, you've got two companies right now in FanDuel and DraftKings with a merger potentially pending FTC review. And we don't even know what form that company is going to take, but it's clearly something that I'm assuming is on your radar as a DFS operator. I know you worry about your own company first and foremost, but you have to be keeping your eye on that situation to see how it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for us, the merger is a great thing. I mean, we're all for it. It's better to fight one giant than two, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, I think that my guess would be that it'll get approved. I have no insight into that. You know,
did they reach out to you guys at all? Did the FTC ask?
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah, yeah. They've reached out to us, and I think a lot of people in the space. And, you know, they've been great to work with. We've got a lot of data we need to get to them. So I know that they're still in the process of doing the review, and I think it's still going to take a little bit longer here. But, you know, if it does go through, we're positioning ourselves and making sure we have a product out there to capitalize on the void that one going to two could potentially lead, certainly if they move to one platform. Which I tend to believe they will do. I mean, if you look at any merger, a lot of the reasons to do it is economies of scale, right? And to eliminate overlap and make more efficient business and not spend as much money. And it's a lot of money to run these sites. So running two sites seems economically prohibitive, but you know, I don't know. They could have other ideas in mind. But either way, I still think it's good for us, and we're excited about the opportunities that it presents for us, and we're lining up and making sure all our ducks in a row so we can capitalize on it this year and beyond.
Okay, question for you product-wise. One thing I was you know, you guys don't offer late swap on your site, and when DraftKings decided to take away late swap for NBA, I thought it was a real opportunity for somebody to grab that very desirable market. Was it a situation you just weren't interested in adding? It was going to take you too long to add it? Did it even cross your mind whether you should or shouldn't add it? Because as an observer, I felt there was definitely a void in the market that could have been capitalized potentially by you guys. Did that cross your mind when that took place?
Well, you know what? No, because we still, like, with Players First, you know, we're trying to appeal to the larger market. And I don't necessarily think the larger market wants late swap.
Okay.
Because the average user, I don't think, wants to have to, you know, worry about swapping out players throughout the night. And, you know, this could be argued all day, right? There's a lot of people who are extremely passionate about late swap and extremely passionate about not having late swap, but I would beg, you know, I would put the argument out there that the people that don't want late swap are your more casual users. The people that want late swap are your sharper users. And our players first approach, you know, we're trying to gear this more, not necessarily, yeah, more towards, you know, the broader market of people. And I don't necessarily think that late swap is something that they want.
Well, now you guys are on the island of non-late swap with FanDuel adding it. So
I know,
we're
the biggest one out there. FanDuel's no late swap slate sticks where it is, we're the biggest no late swap site out there.
Absolutely. We're talking with Steve Crumbles of Fantasy Draft. You know, you guys are running a promotion with our friends over at the Tour Junkies, which I think is phenomenal, trying to get some people who haven't made a deposit, hasn't tried the site out, to go and try you guys out and maybe win a trip to the Masters. And, you know, I thought that was pretty cool. And if people don't know, basically what you need to do is click the link. We've got it pinned in our forum. I think it's also on the Tour Junkie site. And you click the link, you make your deposit, you got one entry. And then if you join the GPP this week, again, I believe it's the, is it the Tour card today? $25. And you get five additional entries that's going to go into that drawing that will take place very soon. So the games obviously lock on Thursday morning. So if you haven't gone to Fantasy Draft and you're hearing this interview and you're liking what Steve has to say, and even better, if you want to go and make a visit to Augusta National, then, you know, I think this is a pretty awesome promo you guys are putting together. You know, I know that you know this because you're flipping the bill on a good chunk of it, is the tickets and hotel rooms in Augusta this time of year, pretty expensive, to say the very least.
Yeah, they don't discount the rates for the hotel rooms, that's for sure. And it's funny because Augusta doesn't have the longest list of hotels that are on the higher end of the star rating. So you gotta find it's three-star hotels are at five-star prices. So it's one of those unique promos that might not be the biggest, certainly when you put it into perspective compared to some of the other ones we've done with Rotor Grinders, and we've done some massive promos. But it's hallowed ground, right? If you're a golf fan, getting onto Augusta is certainly a bucket list. It doesn't matter if it's Wednesday, Saturday, or Sunday, it's something that you want to do, and certainly to go with the Tour Junkies, which, you know, as you guys very well know, have a nice cult following, and they're building their user base. So we're happy to send someone down there. And like you said, all you have to do is register through the Tour Junkies link. So like Dan said, tourjunkies.net. Up top, there's a Fantasy Draft link, or you can find it on Rotor Grinders in the forum. Make a deposit. You actually have to do one paid entry for your first entry. And then a tour card gets you, like you said, an additional five. And then they're going to draw, randomly pick a winner on Thursday morning after the lock. So, and they're going to do it live on Periscope, and I'm sure they'll make it fun like they do with a lot of their stuff. But, yeah, we'll fly you down to Augusta on Sunday, spend the night, Sunday night, hit the course on Monday with the Tour Junkies. Then we're going to go out to dinner that night. And then I'm also going to have a buddy of mine who's a longtime career PGA caddy. He likes to stay under the radar, so I won't say who he caddies for, but I will tell you it's one of the biggest names in golf right now. So he'll have a lot of fun stories for us. It's going to be a memorable night for sure.
Oh, wow. So definitely get involved in that if you haven't done so already. It's a great promotion and a great opportunity to try out their golf product. And I don't know if you even can, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you mentioned that we might be seeing changes down the road with the way that you guys run your golf product. Maybe?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not gonna give away the surprise yet. Some of the folks on the forum probably have an idea of some of the stuff coming. Yeah, but we're gonna have a little bit of a change coming after the Masters here. I don't know the exact date, but it'll be soon thereafter, within the next tournament or two or three afterwards. And I think it's gonna be something that people like.
If you've listened to my podcast, boys and girls, and you've heard my opinion on what I think the ideal golf product should be, then you will like what Fantasy Draft is going to do, because I think it is right up that alley, and I'm super excited for that. MLB season starting right up. I'm looking in the lobby. You don't run a ton of six-figure tournaments, but I see one, $100,000 walk-off. Now, this isn't going to be for opening day, but this has got to be one of the bigger tournaments that you guys have run at Fantasy Draft.
Yeah, you know, we've run for baseball, yeah, for sure. The walk-off is a ways out. We have a $15,000 home run, which is our $25 contest as well. That's going to be on Monday, which, you know, most people are doing the bigger contest on Monday with the shorter slate on opening day. So, yeah, we're getting ready to, you know, any second now, the full MLB lineup will be out there for Sunday and Monday. Right now there's only two contests up, but by the time your listeners are listening to this, we'll have our full spread out there. And, you know, we're going to continue to grow it from there. So you're right. We have $100,000 out there now, and you can satellite and qualify into that. And, you know, we're going to grow it from there. And, you know, we should have six figures most nights of the week, like you see with the $15,000 on Tuesday. So we have high hopes for the MLB season.
And then last thing on golf, too, I got to get to it. You got a you're doing a live PGA championship. This is like your first foray into a live final. I know you know, I said, hey, you know, Steve, last time we talked, live finals, people love them. And here we go. We got one for golf, but in your backyard, if I'm not mistaken, out there in Charlotte, right?
Exactly. Yeah. This is pretty cool. You know, so we're running qualifiers and satellites, and there'll be four qualifiers, and there's four people that go to the final. So the final is going to be at Quail Hollow for the PGA Championship here in Charlotte. So we're going to fly four winners and their guests out here, put them up in a nice hotel down in Uptown. That's what they call it in Charlotte, not downtown. We're going to play a round of golf out at Trump National, which is a beautiful course, as you can imagine, north of the city. And then they're going to get tickets to Saturday, Sunday to take the PGA Championship in at Quail Hollow from the 18th green. We're going to have our own hospitality tent on the 18th green. And the four players are going to compete for $30,000, 10 grand to first, 5 to second, 3 to third, and 2 to fourth. And I think it's going to be a pretty unique and fun experience because it is a live final, but it's much more, you know, a much smaller event with four people being in it. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, like you said, we get asked about live finals all the time, and it's, you know, we're going to be, you're going to see more of this stuff out of us, and they'll be growing over time. So I think it's really unique, and it's nice that it's in Charlotte, in our hometown, and Quail Hollow is another incredible course, and to be on the grounds to watch the PGA Championship is another thing that not many people get to say they did, especially for free.
Well, I've got a couple of I queued for a couple of tickets into the first qualifier. I think it's for the Masters, so who knows? Might be seeing me down there.
Yeah.
I hope so. So.
Yeah, we'd love to.
But, Steve, I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, I urge you, everybody, to check out that promo with the Tour Junkies. Also, remember, you know, we've got them sponsoring the Happy Hour show, so we're talking more about their content and our premium content as well, lots of it exclusively for Fantasy Draft. So they're a growing site. We want to see them continue to, you know, gain market share over time. And I really appreciate how frank you were on some of these conversations that we had, because I know a lot of times people are a little bit reserved, don't want to say too much, maybe give a political answer. But I feel like, you know, you've spoke from the heart, to say the very least, and told us not just what we wanted to hear, but the way everything kind of went down, and much appreciated by me, and I know the listeners on that.
Well, thanks for having me, Dan. One last thing I wanted to mention that we didn't touch on is we have, in case the listeners haven't noticed, we have rake-free head-to-heads across every sport from a quarter up to $10,000. So they're you know, I don't think you're going to find rake-free head-to-heads out there anywhere else, so give them a shot and check them out.
And that's every buy-in level?
Every buy-in level from a quarter up, well, every buy-in level depending on what you consider every, but we have a lot from a quarter up to $10,000. So
yeah, I'm looking at that right now, and you're right. You know, every sport, every level up to, you know, $100 rake-free head-to-head. People these days have, you know, been up, you know, talking about profitability. Well, that's a good way to try and build some profitability, you know, playing in rake-free contests. I'm glad you brought that up. I overlooked that. And that's
important. I mean, we try to, you know, as part of Players First, we try to keep the rake a little bit lower and even as low as free. So you'll find them in intermediate and beginner variations as well for people that are new to the site. And
I like it. You have intermediate, too. So it's not just beginner and then, you know, let it go. You know, you actually have an intermediate side of things. That's different. No other site that I know of is offering intermediate games. That's pretty cool.
Yep. Intermediate is basically anyone who's not a beginner and doesn't have an experience badge falls into the intermediate. So
perfect.
Check it out.
Definitely. They are Fantasy Draft. Steve, thanks so much, as always, for giving us some time. Really enjoyed the conversation. We'll have to do it again, my man. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.